This is HeartWise, offering practical tips and time-proven guidelines to make your life healthier, happier, and more fulfilling. Today you'll learn simple, Bible-based principles for building and maintaining optimum mental and physical health, all while deepening your relationship with your Creator. I'm your HeartWise host, Charles Mills. So, you're gonna have a baby. Good for you. Seems that's happening a lot these days. I've even seen women post pictures of themselves heavy with child on Facebook. Kind of a prenatal portrait of mother and soon-to-arrive offspring. Kind of cool. I can almost guarantee you that each of these mothers is breathing the same prayer. Please, Lord, let my baby be healthy. Well, God can do only what we allow him to do. Healthy babies happen not so much because of a miracle from the Almighty, but as the result of some simple yet profound decisions that mothers make. What decisions are those? Well, I've got someone waiting to share some sound ideas with us. Dr. John Kelly is a researcher and lifestyle interventionist. He's the founder and past president of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine and has been instrumental in working with universities to explore the integration of lifestyle medicine concepts into the medical system. Dr. Kelly lives in Roanoke, Virginia. Dr. Kelly, if a woman comes to you and says, guess what, I'm going to have a baby in 9 months, what advice would you give her to assure that 9 months later, that baby would have an opportunity to be a healthy, strong child?
Well, Charles, it's good to be with you today. And I can't think of a more important and relevant question for a mother to ask. And you know, it's interesting what the science shows, and I want to get into that. But first, I want to say that actually there's evidence that she can begin to do things that can be important even before she knows she's carrying the child. We'll learn a little bit more of that as I talk about epigenetics. That's what I want to share with mothers, especially and expectant mothers as well today. Epigenetics is a new science coming out of the field of genetics. And what we have learned is that what we inherit from our parents is not just DNA and genes, but we also inherit epigenetic molecules that are controlling those genes. And so the relevance for this could hardly be greater for mothers. Let me just start with a couple of studies that were done in animals, and then I want to talk about a couple in humans. The first one is actually done with agouti mice, which have been genetically modified to have the genes that will cause obesity and diabetes and heart disease, so that we could study these diseases in an animal model. And so researchers at Duke University about a decade ago or so, they developed the hypothesis that the effects of the mother's diet and lifestyle during pregnancy could make epigenetic changes in the fetus, developing fetus, that would actually modify the effects of genes in the DNA. And so a research study was done, and the result was that a mother who, while pregnant, a mouse that was fed a special DNA methylating diet, we call it, but actually it was largely foods with folic acid, that diet altered the gene expression so profoundly that the hundreds of thousands of dollars of work done to put these genes in the genome of this special mouse were turned off, and the baby was born without the what we call phenotype, or without the characteristics that had been bred into the mother specifically for doing these studies.
Wow.
And this was first published in 1998 by doctors Waterlin and Jertl. And these studies are still producing repercussions in science. The effects of that diet, that what we might call perinatal diet, was noticed for up to 3 to 4 generations. The beneficial effects were seen in the offspring of, so that would be the great-grandchild that would be affected.
Yeah.
And then there was another study that was very profound that's been done in rats. And this study was published in the Journal of Neuroscience in 2008. And here they took The title of this study was Maternal High-Fat Diet and Fetal Programming, Increased Proliferation of Hypothalamic Peptide-Producing Neurons that Increase Risk for Overeating and Obesity. So here, actually, the studies in this rat model were able to not only create with a diet fed to the mother while she was pregnant, they were able to create behavior patterns in the offspring that persisted into, from infancy on into adolescence and adulthood. And what the researchers did was they gave the mother, this pregnant rat, a high-fat diet. And this high-fat diet, and we're talking about a level of fat that is comparable to the levels that Americans eat. Some of us, of course, the average is about 37% of our calories from fat, but some eat much higher than that, 60%. Sure. And so these rats were fed a high-fat diet. The result was that there was an overexpression of a gene on the third chromosome that led to the production of actually an increased number of neurons in the developing rat fetus. So this was producing an anatomical change in the brain hypothalamus of the developing fetus. And the result is that after infancy and adolescence and adulthood, those cells were producing peptides that increased the propensity to eat more. The offspring ate more when the mother had been fed that diet versus a normal diet. They had an increased preference for fat. They would choose food that had higher fat in it than low fat. They had an early onset of puberty. They had increased cholesterol and triglycerides in their bloodstream. And they, of course, were heavier. So this showed that you could actually feed a mother during pregnancy a diet that would change the gene expression in ways that could change the actual brain cells, which would produce different behavior in the offspring.
You know, Dr. Kelly, as you're saying this, I'm thinking this is sounding kind of familiar. We're talking about laboratory rats here, but is this happening in the human world too?
That is the question, isn't it? Well, let me turn now to a couple of interesting studies that I want to share. The first one was published in the European Journal of Human Genetics in 2007 by Dr. K-A-A-T-I. I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce that. I think that's Katie. And Bygren, B-Y-G-R-E-N. And this was actually in the news, in some of the popular press. This was an amazing study done looking at crop yields. There are such excellent records in Finland, where this, I believe the study was done. They were able to track a correlation between when there was an abundance of food production, better crops, during the years of puberty, and the effect that it produced in the grandchildren, two generations later, that had a higher likelihood of heart disease, diabetes, insulin resistance, etc. And so that study, then coupled with another one, really gives us pause to think. This one I'm talking about now is just coming off the press. Professor Keith Godfrey from Southampton University in England. They've discovered that mothers who eat badly during pregnancy.
And these are human mothers.
Human mothers now.
Okay, all right.
Can affect their children's DNA so that they will be more susceptible to obesity later in life. Doesn't this sound just like the rat study?
It does.
The study, to be published in the journal Diabetes, showed that the epigenetic effect worked independently of the size of the mother. What they found was that even trim, fit mothers, if they ate badly during pregnancy, were just as likely to induce obesity in their child as overweight or obese mothers who ate badly. And what they discovered, and they measured the epigenetic changes in nearly 300 children at birth and related these epigenetic effects from the mother's diet to obesity rates later in childhood. So this just came out this month, and I haven't even read the entire article yet. I was just reading some of the summary there for you. So there's no doubt, even though it's not about mothers, I wonder if it's relevant to mention the study using diet to treat prostate cancer in men.
Yes.
This study was, again, it's a human study, makes it highly relevant, and it was published in 2008. And Dr. Dean Ornish and some of his colleagues took 30 men who had prostate cancer. These men agreed to undergo a dietary intervention and see how this affected their cancer before undertaking any kind of non-lifestyle treatment, you know, no chemo, new surgery. And so they did biopsies of the actual prostate organ where the cancer was. They did this at baseline and 3 months later. So for 3 months, these men ate a special, really it would be a diet that I might prescribe for a person with high cholesterol or high blood sugars. It had been proven to improve heart disease and lower risk and so forth. They used that basic same diet in these men, and then at 3 months, what they found was not only had their cholesterol and blood sugar improved, which is, you know, what we usually use this diet for, but they found over 400 genes in these men's prostate cancer that were changed in their expression. And in general, the pattern was genes that we know to be cancer-causing were turned down. They were turned off. They were not causing cancer actively as they had been. And those genes that were known to be fighting cancer, those that are destroy cancer in our prostate, those had been turned up. And there was just simple pathological evidence that the cancers were regressing, were improving. So here we have three studies showing that how we eat can change our gene expression. And literally, it does change our DNA because it methylates, it turns off and turns on genes in a healthy way.
My. I want to take a break right now, Dr. Kelly. When we come back, I want to talk more about this. This is pretty amazing. What I hear you saying here, and I almost hesitate to say it, is that food can turn genes on and off that cause cancer. If it's cancer, there must be other things too. The food must really regulate a lot of stuff going on in our bodies. And we'll talk more about that in just a minute. So stay tuned. I'd like to take a moment to invite you to visit the HeartWise Ministries team on the internet. Stop by heartwiseministries.org and discover for yourself that optimum health is not the result of favorable genes or the right combination of pharmaceuticals. No, optimum health is the result of making the right choices each and every moment of each and every day. If you're like me, you're probably a little confused about what the media and marketing moguls are feeding us. There are a lot of potions, pills, and promises out there. Some work, some don't, and some are downright dangerous. Whom do you believe? Whom do you trust? Board-certified cardiologist Dr. James Markham, founder-director of HeartWise Ministries, says there is a source of information that can be trusted and followed. That's the Bible, God's owner's manual, as he calls it, for us all. The information you find on heartwiseministries.org is information backed by biblical truth. It can be trusted because God can be trusted. So stop by, won't you? That's heartwiseministries.org. Did you know that certain foods can make you beautiful? And those foods aren't on the menu at your local fast food restaurant. Unrefined, starchy foods, not protein-rich foods, are what turn human bodies into beautiful, healthy works of art. They are the premium fuel that keeps you going, growing, and overcoming disease. The road to better health is paved with potatoes, whole wheat pastas, brown rice, beans, and whole grain breads.
I'm Dr. Hans Dior, inviting you to join the people in the know and enroll in the next CHIP program in your area. It can make all the difference.
Hi, I'm Renee Mitchell. CHIP woke me up and gave me a new life. I am now 65 pounds lighter and losing weight, eating more, but eating the right foods. And it's easy and comfortable.
For more information about the Coronary Health Improvement Project and to find resources to help you live a healthier, happier life, visit chiphealth.org. That's chiphealth.org. Our guest today is Dr. John Kelly, and he is saying some pretty incredible things here. Not only is he saying them, he's backing them up with scientific studies. Dr. Kelly, before the break, I hinted that, is it possible for food to turn on and off the genes that cause cancer or make way for cancer? And can we spread that into other areas of our life and our health? Can we really regulate health to that degree?
Yes, Charles, it's absolutely remarkable to me that this can be so, but I'm so glad that it is because we can use it as a very effective treatment. Let me just give a couple of facts to that. First, the primary technique that science has discovered so far, the most powerful effect that we've discovered on gene expression is nutrients or diet. And let me just say something about that. You know, a lot of times we don't realize what this means. I'm speaking of gene expression and genes being turned on and off. I think for a moment, we know that every cell in our body came from the chromosomes in that first cell that came from mother's ovary that was fertilized by dad's sperm. It grew to a viable human being, and here we are.
Yes.
And every cell in our body has reproduced that original set of 23 chromosomes. So we really have essentially the very same DNA, the very same genes in every cell in our body. And I think we all pretty much know that these days. But what we've not thought about is, if that's true, then why does some of the cells make a toenail? Some of them make an eye. Some of them make a liver. I mean, do you realize the same DNA is in the cells that make toenails that could make liver cells?
Hmm.
So how is it that it doesn't make a liver cell? And the answer is that the genes for everything except a toenail, in essence, all the other genes are turned off. And so this cell produces the toenail bit. The same thing about any organ in our body. So then what we have learned is that our genes can be turned on and off. And that, of course, immediately created a lot of stir in science because humans love to understand things and use them. And so scientists are very busy learning how to turn on and turn off the genes. And what they've discovered is that so far, nutrients or diet is the most powerful thing. And so the fact is that our diet, Charles, probably has 7 to 10 times the influence on gene expression of our DNA than what we actually inherited from mom and dad. I think we should think of genes as raw material that our epigenome uses to produce who we are. And we can change the epigenome. We can't change the DNA sequence. We can't change those genes, but we can change how they are used. And so that, like the mouse I mentioned, where they fed the mother a DNA methylating diet, and the genes were turned off so that baby, for up to 3 to 4 generations, the offspring did not seem to have the propensity for diabetes and obesity. You know, this is interesting because I have patients all the time say, well, you know, my mom, my grandmother, my parents, everybody in my family has diabetes, so I'm sure I've got it too. Well, the fact of the matter is we don't just inherit genes from our parents and grandparents. We inherit lifestyles. We inherit a taste for certain kinds of food, I know I inherited a night owl sleeping pattern because of my father. We worked, when I was a young fellow, we would stay up and work late most every night, and so I adopted some habits of lifestyle, and I know those are not healthy. I need to, I've had to change those, to work to change those. So the other thing I wanted to say is, it works not only with cancer, it's been shown to work with diabetes. I just mentioned the mothers there, that their diet, if it was unhealthy, increased the risk of diabetes in their children and offspring. It's also been shown to work in a number of other diseases. So this is highly relevant, and in fact, the whole field of nutrigenomics has developed around trying to find and design specific nutrients that will turn on and turn off genes. The problem for the nutrigenomics field is that we're not having much success finding a one-to-one correlation. You could, let's say, give folic acid to someone to turn off gene, 10,672 out of 30,000. It instead has a global pattern. A change in diet seems to change hundreds and thousands of gene expression and not just a single one. And so this is a very complex scientific problem.
Well, it certainly is. And I know that we could do program after program on this. We just have a couple minutes left here, Dr. Kelly. Bottom line, this pregnant woman who is going to have a baby, what should she be eating? Give us a quick overview here.
Yes, great. Well, I would recommend, and I recommend to my patients and relatives, that first off, we need to have a diet that includes healthy amounts of plant foods. Plants are we're discovering new ways in which they are beneficial. We need to eat a lot more fruits and vegetables than the average American is eating, less than 3 servings a day. And the target, as you I'm sure know, is 5 or more. And the fact is, the studies indicate that we have not found an upper limit. What that means, there's not like, well, you got to be careful you don't eat more than 9 servings. No, you can safely eat a diet completely of plants. Even a vegan diet has been shown to be very healthy. A second thing is we need to move away from processed foods, because processing foods, number one, it removes a number of those healthy elements that we know are there, but we don't know which ones they are. We don't know how to take them out of the food and put them back into the processed product yet. So we're losing out a lot of things. That's why like the Wonder Bread, fortified. We fortify our bread, white bread, because we now know there are many things that are taken out, and we put back a few of them. But we know there are many more hundreds that we're taking out when we process food. And then I would say we should move really lower the fat. It appears that in general, fat or visible fat, fat that's been like oils, Crisco, butter, margarine, these visible fats, we call them, they are not helpful at all. You should move away from that and eat foods in their natural form, like olives instead of olive oil, or eating avocado, or eating peanuts instead of peanut oil.
Dr. Kelly, our time has slipped away. I am so sorry I have to stop you, because you are giving us such good information here. I want to remind our listeners that we have a website, www.heartwiseministries.org, and we'll have Dr. Kelly back more and talk more about this amazing field next time on HeartWise. This is Charles Mills, along with Dr. John Kelly, saying thank you for listening and inviting you to remain HeartWise. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on HeartWise. If you'd like more information on how to build and maintain optimum physical, mental, and spiritual health, log on to heartwiseministries.org. HeartWise is a listener-supported program, and your partnership with us would be greatly appreciated. Once again, our web address is heartwiseministries.org.